live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, tensions are rising in Orange County over reports of a potential ICE facility. Local officials say no official plans exist, but residents packed a meeting last night to voice concerns about the impact on their community. Our Kimberly Izar was there and has the details. Housing, childcare, and the cost of living. Affordability is a key theme of Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State. What to listen for in today's speech. We'll talk with New York Public News Network's Jimmy Vielkind. Deadlines are approaching for health insurance enrollment in New York and Pennsylvania just as key tax credits expire. We'll talk about whether they could come back and what you should do in the meantime. And the Catskills helped invent American stand-up. Now a new generation is bringing it back. We'll meet the comedian at the center of the Borscht Belt's comedy revival after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The White House says President Trump is ending temporary protected status for Somalis who are living in the U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says some of them will have to leave the country by March 17th. The abrupt decision comes as her agency has sent thousands of federal agents to operate in Minnesota. Many Somalis and Somali Americans live there. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Labor Department reported that inflation held steady last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped more than 300 points in early trading.
Consumer prices in December were up 2.7% from a year ago. That's the same annual increase we saw in November. So inflation's not getting worse, but it's not getting better either. Gasoline prices were down during the year, but grocery prices were up. The cost of electricity and natural gas jumped sharply. Stripping out volatile food and energy prices, so-called core inflation was 2.6% in December, also unchanged from the month before. The cost of living report comes 2 weeks before the next meeting of the Federal Reserve. Fed policymakers are expected to hold interest rates steady after cutting rates at their last three meetings. The central bank is trying to balance concerns over stubborn inflation with a softening job market. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
President Trump says he is going to impose a 25% tariff on all goods imported from Iran. This is over the Iranian regime's attacks on anti-government protesters. Human rights groups say at least 600 people have been killed. Iran is struggling, according to Karim Sajapour. He is a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Last June in the 12-day war, Israel assassinated Iran's top perhaps couple dozen senior Revolutionary Guard commanders. The country was also humiliated by the U.S. war, and their most important regional proxies like Lebanese Hezbollah, Hamas have been destroyed. Their ally in Caracas, Venezuela, Maduro, was just captured.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments this morning. This is on cases testing whether states may bar transgender students from participating in publicly funded school sports. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports.
West Virginia Attorney General John McCuskey defends the state law, contending that sports are unique.
Men are bigger, faster, and stronger than women, and competitive athletics are incredibly important to our society and to the growth of young women. And we believe that space in this instance should be reserved for biological girls.
But not everyone agrees this case is about that limited objective. Here's John Bursch, senior counsel for the conservative group Alliance Defending Freedom.
This question is actually bigger than sports, and it's about whether those who support the gender ideology movement are going to be allowed to continue harming children, women, and adults.
Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The FBI says a Mississippi man has confessed to setting a fire at the state's synagogue in Jackson. Authorities say that Stephen Spencer Pittman made the admission from the hospital where he is being treated for burns. He's been charged with arson. The synagogue sustained significant damage and the library was targeted. Health data show that cancer is more survivable than ever. 70% of patients now live 5 years or more after their diagnoses. Still, as NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports, more people are getting cancer amid disparities in care.
Scientific breakthroughs have made even some of the most lethal and advanced diseases of lung cancer and melanoma more survivable. The 5-year survival rate is at a high watermark at 70%, up from about half in the 1970s, according to the annual American Cancer Society report. But cancer diagnoses are rising to an expected 2.1 million in the U.S. this year. And access to cancer treatment continues to be inequitable. Native American populations have the highest mortality rate for many cancers. The study says patients also find financial, emotional, and caregiving burdens do not ease after treatment. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News.
As many as 100,000 people in El Paso, Texas, may still be without water. A water main broke over the weekend, and city officials are still working to repair it. Some parts of El Paso remain under boil water alerts. Several schools are closed or also under boil water alerts. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. And the Public Welfare Foundation, committed to advancing transformative youth and criminal justice reforms.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. Governor Kathy Hochul is set to deliver her State of the State address this afternoon, with affordability expected to take center stage, from housing and child care to energy costs and immigration policy. To help us understand what the governor is likely to propose and what signals Albany will be watching most closely, we're joined now by Jimmy Vielkind, who covers New York State issues for WNYC, Gothamist, and the New York Public News Network. Jimmy, welcome.
Hi, Tim.
You've been covering state government in Albany for years. What stands out about this particular State of the State address compared with past ones from Governor Hochul?
Well, I think that it's important to look at this, Governor Hochul's fifth State of the State address, in the context of the fact that she's standing for re-election this year. And so what experts and observers expect is that there's going to be no sudden moves in this speech. She's going to be very judicious about whether or not the proposals she puts forward are going to engender any kind of big fights. And I think that she's going to aim for a mass appeal and really trying to hold the political center. And so we can already see, as you said, this focus on affordability in a few of the key proposals that are coming. First is a plan, which was already kind of pre-announced, to spend up to $1.7 billion in state funds to expand child care. Now, that includes both subsidies for people who go to child care centers and also the slow build-out of child care for two-year-olds in New York City, a place where there's already pre-kindergarten universally, as well as 3K for three-year-old children. We're also going to hear from the governor some type of plan that is designed to stem the rising cost of auto insurance. Now, we're waiting to hear more details about this. It's something that could be very wonky and technical, but as someone who pays car insurance and has watched his bill steadily go up, it's something that I think is going to have real mass appeal. One other area that we expect to hear more about from the governor has to do with the environmental review process for housing construction. The state's Environmental Qualitative Review Act, or CEQRA, usually requires developers of large projects to go through a potentially months-long process of looking at the potential impacts of their work and proposing mitigations. Hochul has said she wants to streamline that process to make more housing be available, which hopefully will eventually turn down the cost.
I want to ask you a little bit more about some of the policy details in childcare specifically. Have you seen any signals from Hochul's team about how deep or broad those proposals might go and how they'll be financed?
Well, we know for a fact that the state's existing CCAP, which is the Child Care Access Program, is going to be funded with just about an extra $1 billion. That's significant because Hochul has already expanded the eligibility for this program in previous years, but there just hasn't been enough money to meet all of the demand. Several counties around the state, including all five boroughs of New York City, have wait lists where people who are eligible for those child care vouchers can't get them because there just simply isn't enough money available. So we know that the additional funding should help alleviate some of those problems and maybe a step toward a greater expansion in coming years. The two-care proposal will start this fall, and that's according to New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who joined Hochul last week for an announcement of the program in Brooklyn. It will initially start with about 2,000 slots in, quote, high-need areas. We're still waiting to see exactly what those details are, but both Mamdani and Hochul have described it as sort of a first step toward a larger system that will eventually encompass as many as 60,000 two-year-olds in New York City. And Tim, you hit on the biggest question of all. how is the state going to pay for this? And it's something that I don't expect an answer on today. The State of the State speech is always interesting in that it usually precedes by a week or two the announcement of the state budget. So the state budget is expected to top $250 billion this year, and it's where Hochul will have to describe where she's going to increase money, where she's going to cut, and how she proposes to pay for it. There's quite a bit of controversy over whether or not the state should raise taxes on the rich, be they income taxes or corporate taxes, in order to fund these programs. So we'll have to watch and see next week what Hochul comes up with.
There's been a lot of chatter about housing affordability and even environmental rule changes to spur building. What challenges or legislative hurdles do those ideas face when it comes to housing, and how might that interlock with Hochul's affordability message?
You know, it's very early to see that, but we know that legislators have passed into law the CEQA process. New York is very proud of its environmental regulations and its environmental reviews. And so I think that there are many Democrats who control the state legislature who are going to be pretty wary of some of those announced proposals to change that law and to perhaps exempt some projects from review. It's a little bit too early to see. But at the same time, the political winds are shifting. We know Mamdani, a progressive Democrat, has taken steps to try and streamline development. There is a recognition among Democrats, you can look to Gavin Newsom in California, for one example, that they need to be a party that allows for more building, more construction of housing in order to meet increased demand and, again, hopefully lower costs.
Well, Newsom in California also saying he would veto a billionaire's tax, so taxing the rich there too. Your reporting today in Gothamist mentions that progressive lawmakers and activists say they're going to be watching to see how far Governor Hochul goes on immigration issues this year. How might she respond to that sort of framing in her speech, and what does it tell us about her agenda?
You know, last year was very interesting when, of course, President Trump took office at the end of January. He embarked on an aggressive deportation campaign that has unfolded around the country, but also here in New York. And so Hochul had been walking a pretty fine line on the immigration issue. On the one hand, she stressed that the state cooperated with ICE, the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, but also that New York has compassion for immigrants. There's a legislative proposal called the New York for All Act, which has existed for about a half dozen years. And one of its main provisions would prevent state and local law enforcement agencies from entering into explicit cooperation agreements with federal immigration agents. Hochul has not taken a position on that bill. And it's something that really has a sharp reaction from Republicans, both at the federal level and at the state level. So what Hochul is proposing, we hear, is an expansion of what are called sensitive places. That includes houses of worship, schools, and hospitals, in which the state wants to make a law where it would require a judicial warrant for federal immigration agents to enter. New York already has restrictions on federal immigration enforcement in state courthouses. That law was the Protect Our Courts Act, and it was passed several years ago. It's the same idea, only expanded to other sensitive places that previously administrations would not direct enforcement because they are recognized as sensitive. The other area that we're expected to hear some details from Hochul is a proposal that would give citizens some kind of recourse if they are either injured or have their property damaged by federal immigration agents. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work, and we'll have to see, based on the details of these proposals, whether those progressive activists who are pushing Hochul to back the New York for All Act, that stronger bill, whether they will be satisfied.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Jimmy Vielkind, who covers New York State issues for WNYC, Gothamist, and the New York Public News Network, previewing Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address this afternoon. One of those voices is inside her own party, Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado, pushing for issues like immigration and affordability, also running against her for election as governor. Do you expect any kind of tone or specific language that the governor might address toward voices like Delgado or other progressives in the legislature, or perhaps even Republicans who are critiquing her?
Well, I think that's a very, very good question. I don't expect her to say anything about Delgado. She's been studiously ignoring him since he broke with her and declared that he was challenging her in a Democratic primary. The governor has stripped his staff, and we heard from Delgado that he's actually going to be skipping the speech today. But I do think the governor has her eyes on her progressive flank. She knows that if she's going to win a second full term in November, she needs progressives in the base of the Democratic Party to not sit home, but to enthusiastically come out and vote for her. And she seems to realize that one of the keys to doing that is to maintain good relationships with Mayor Mamdani. Now, Mamdani was at Hochul's side when she announced those child care subsidies. We will see what he says after the speech today and whether he gives Hochul's version of progressivism and her place in terms of figuring out how far she wants to go on some of these issues, whether he gives that his explicit backing. I think that is going to go a long way for the governor as she tries to shore up her left flank going into an election in November. Now, on the political right, she is aiming for this broad mass of independent voters in the state by doing these kind of pocketbook issues. It's drawn some sharp cries from Republicans who say that they are the ones who have been talking about affordability in New York in this since Democrats took over all the levers of government in 2019. Republicans say that Democrats' approach to create new government programs for things like child care will inevitably raise taxes, and it will do nothing in the long term to make New York more cost competitive compared to other states.
For non-insiders, what should folks listen to or listen for, pay attention to in the speech this afternoon as it unfolds? Are there the particular lines or sections that might signal whether this message she has today is more about governing affordability or more about, frankly, gearing up for campaign season?
You know, I'll be very curious to hear how she speaks about Donald Trump and the federal government in Washington. Hochul has enjoyed a pretty reasonable working relationship with the president. He has not sent National Guard troops to New York City, in contrast with what's happened to other blue states. But at the same time, Hochul wants to draw a contrast between her administration, her state, and the policies of the federal government, which is only, again, going to be important for her reelection. So one thing I'll be listening for in the speech that I think everyone can listen to is exactly how she speaks about Donald Trump, how she speaks about the federal government, how viciously she's attacking, or whether she's avoiding them completely.
Well, speaking of avoiding, what omissions today could be as telling as what the governor says?
Well, I think we already touched on some of them. There's obviously the question of immigration and what she says about that. And frankly, I'll be listening to see if she says anything about the calls to raise taxes on the rich to pay for this agenda. I don't expect her to do so. I think that that's going to be reserved for next week's budget presentation. But I think that omission could be very telling if it does indeed happen.
That's Jimmy Veelkind, who covers New York State issues in Albany for WNYC, Gothamist, and the New York Public News Network. He co-reported an article on Gothamist.com right now with Walter Wolfman about Governor Hochul's State of the State speech today. You can read it at Gothamist.com. Jimmy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim. Always a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
We'll stick in Albany for just a minute. Several election bills are moving forward in the New York State Senate, including one that would move New York's presidential primary to Super Tuesday. Samuel King with the New York Public News Network reports it's part of an annual Senate focus on election and voting issues.
Since 2012, New Yorkers have voted after Super Tuesday, while presidential candidates paid more attention to states like California and Texas.
They fly in and they collect big checks from corporate boardrooms and penthouses in Manhattan and fly out.
Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from Orange County, says the bill would give New Yorkers more of a say in who becomes the presidential nominee and increase the Empire State's voice in a candidate's campaigns.
They come here to talk to our voters. They come here to elevate our issues.
The package pushed forward by Senate Democrats includes proposals aimed at combating voter deception, adding early voting sites, and protecting election officers. Republican Minority Leader Rob Ord of Niagara County questioned the Democrats' focus on the issue.
It's partisan electioneering masqueraded as election policy.
Ord says Republicans want New York to adopt a voter ID law. In Albany, I'm Samuel King for the New York Public News Network.
Coming up, reports of an ICE facility in Orange County. Nothing's official, but the town's board meeting last night was packed with people demanding answers. Kimberly Izar reports after the break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills, with campuses in Harris and Calicoon, offering inpatient and outpatient services to Sullivan County and surrounding communities. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
There are 14,932 ways to fall on the radio. In this next hour of Radiolab, we will bring you 8. Falling! That's the next Radiolab.
Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, the Three Sons team up with a pipe organ for the musical equivalent of Godzilla stomping on Bambi. And there's something new by Mondo Hamondo. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. A vacant warehouse in Chester in Orange County could soon become New York State's next ICE processing facility, according to internal ICE documents first reported by the Washington Post last week. The news drew significant local opposition, with hundreds of people protesting outside the Chester Senior Center last night. The village board relocated their board meeting to a larger venue last minute to accommodate the crowd. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar was there and has this report.
The tiny village of Chester, New York, has about 4,000 residents. It's in the state's Black Dirt region, an area known for its deeply fertile soil. And it's where the Trump administration has proposed a new ICE facility. On Monday evening, hundreds of people gathered outside the Chester Senior Center ahead of the village board meeting to protest the plan.
Now! What do we want?
ICE now!
Where do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
ICE now!
Where do we want it?
Now!
People from up and down New York State, including Ulster, Sullivan, Orange, Dutchess, and Columbia counties, came through to oppose the immigration facility. Orange County resident Candida Beto says that as an immigrant herself, President Trump's growing immigration raids feel like a nightmare.
Every day we wake up to go to work and we have to look over our shoulders, outside our windows, before we even head out to do our job. All we want to do is work. All we've been doing is work. We're not criminals. They're focusing, in the wrong people, and they don't care.
The facility would be one of several small and large detention centers the Trump administration plans to build to hold more than 80,000 immigrants before deporting them. That's according to internal ICE documents obtained by the Washington Post. If built, it would be Orange County's second immigration facility. The Orange County Jail currently serves as a detention facility in Goshen, where the number of people detained by ICE have exploded since the start of the Trump administration. Poughkeepsie City Council member Daniel Atona said there's no need for ICE in the Hudson Valley or anywhere.
We need to abolish and prosecute ICE. We literally just saw them out in Minnesota execute Renee Good on video in broad daylight in the street. Absolutely unacceptable. They will hurt, harm, kill anyone who stands in their way. The only thing that can protect us is if we're out here in numbers saying we need to abolish and prosecute ICE, make that very clear to Congress. Anything less is unacceptable.
Richard Witt is the executive director of Rural and Migrant Ministry, a nonprofit serving immigrant communities in rural New York, and one of the organizers of Monday's protest. He says the families they serve are already grappling with the impact of growing immigration raids.
Over 20 of our youth have lost parents in the past 6 months. They're living in fear. They're deeply concerned about the separation of families. And they're concerned about their own futures.
And if this were to be built, what would this mean for the Hudson Valley and rural New York especially?
Well, I think what we've seen in other parts of the state, most notably Batavia, New York, is that when you have a detention facility, that becomes your reputation. And the beautiful quality of life in the village of Chester in our Hudson Valley goes out the window because there becomes a war zone, if you will, that scares the heck out of people and raises the anger levels. And we don't need that.
Hundreds of people lined up hours before the meeting to enter the building to make a public comment. While the proposal was not on the village meeting agenda, Chester Mayor Tom Bell said they have not received any communication or application regarding the potential use of the warehouse.
There is no manner related to 29 Elizabeth Drive currently pending or under consideration by the village of Chester.
Here's what else we know. The proposed facility is located at the former Pep Boys warehouse on Elizabeth Drive. It's an industrial area of Chester tucked away behind manufacturing and distribution warehouses. The warehouse is also owned by IEP Chester LLC. It's a subsidiary of Icon Enterprises, the holding company owned by billionaire and former Trump advisor Carl Icahn. Smaller processing sites like the one proposed in Chester could hold up to 1,500 people before they're transferred to a larger detention facility. Mia Rosario is a Chester resident who says an ICE facility would change the diverse fabric behind her community.
My family is a family of Hispanics. I'm a proud Latina. And I don't want to be in fear that my sister is going to get pepper sprayed at school or that my stepdad might get harassed about his citizenship just because he is very Dominican. There are a lot of people here who contribute so greatly to this town. And it's one of those places that I feel safe.
Say it loud, say it clear!
Immigrants are welcome here!
Say it loud, say it clear!
Immigrants are welcome here!
Rosario is just one of the hundreds of residents who turned out Monday to make clear that if ICE comes to town, they will push back. In Chester, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
Thanks to Kim for that report. Chester is among 16 locations targeted for processing centers and the only one located in New York. County Executive Stephen Newhouse has publicly voiced disappointment over the proposed sale, saying he hoped the warehouse had been sold to a film studio. Selling the distribution warehouse to the federal government will remove the facility from the tax rolls. The distribution, which has full market value of $25 million, according to the town's assessment roll, pays more than $520,000 in taxes. Split between school taxes and town and county taxes. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll speak with Liam Mayo of the River Reporter about what folks can do now that the enhanced health insurance tax credits have expired. Experts say it may not be the end of the story. We'll learn more about what it can mean for your premiums and the deadlines you need to know after a break. This is Radio Chatskill.
This week in This American Life, 10 months after the fall of the brutal dictatorship in Syria, a group of Syrian comedians decides to go on a national tour. But it is really not clear what they can say with their newfound freedom, or what's still going to get them in serious trouble.
I don't think something bad will happen to us. Nobody cares about us. I'm not George Clooney. It's a few people telling some jokes. Let them.
Turns out, some people don't want to let them. That's this week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul gives her State of the State address this afternoon, laying out her agenda for the year, even as the state faces federal cuts and as the governor faces a primary from within her own administration. Hear special coverage from the New York Public News Network live on Radio Catskill, hosted by David Lombardo from the Capitol Press Room, with commentary and analysis from Chantel Plummer and Morgan Hook. The State of the State address this afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. As the cost of health insurance continues to rise, millions of people are facing new uncertainty this year after enhanced health insurance tax credits expired at the end of 2025. Those credits helped keep monthly premiums affordable for people buying coverage on the individual market. But despite their expiration, health policy experts say there may still be a path to restoring them. To help us understand what's at stake, what deadlines are approaching in New York and Pennsylvania, and whether there's still hope for relief, We are joined now by Liam Mayo of the River Reporter, who's been covering the story. Liam, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
Let's remind folks again what the credits were, the health enhanced health insurance tax credits, why they matter to so many people in our region.
Yeah, so these enhanced premium tax credits were brought in during the COVID-19 pandemic to further expand the tax credits that were already offered to help get people on the individual marketplaces offered through the Affordable Care Act. According to to get a sense of the people that helped, around 6 million people joined the individual healthcare marketplaces after these credits came in. And to get a look at some of the numbers, in Pennsylvania's 8th district, including Wayne and Pike counties, there's an estimate that a basic silver plan in the marketplace, like a mid-tier plan, had about $106 a month premiums with these tax credits and would jump 111% to $223 per month with just the base ACA credits. Similar situation across the river over in rural New York, New York 19, including Sullivan County and some of the counties around it. There was an estimate of around $109 for silver plan premiums going up to $226 after those credits expire. And those credits, as you mentioned, did expire at the end of this year, or at the end of last year, excuse me. So people are already seeing these major jumps in premiums if they've decided to keep their insurance into the new year.
Yeah, it's definitely something people feel in their monthly premiums. Your reporting indicates that health experts say there's still hope to restoring them. What are they pointing to that gives them that optimism?
Yeah, we talked to a couple of people who are watching this on the policy level. There is movement on some kind of agreement to restore the enhanced premium tax credits at the federal level. The House of Representatives voted to pass a quote-unquote clean three-year extension of the tax credits with 17 Republicans joining with Democrats to get the bill through. People we talked to said that really doesn't have a future in the Senate, that three-year clean extension, but it kind of serves as a starting point for a bipartisan group in the Senate to talk about some deal that could expand these while also including elements such as a new income cap or a minimum premium requirement. The people we talked to also said, if this happens, whenever a deal is reached, there's a really strong possibility that the credits will apply retroactively. So if you've been paying the enhanced premiums or the higher premiums since January, and a deal is reached in March, there may be some mechanism for you to claim that money back either on your next year's taxes or through some other mechanism so that it would apply to the people who've had insurance coverage this whole time.
This would be the first time I think Congress would have acted retroactively in this way. Why does that matter for people making these decisions right now?
Yeah, I mean, it matters for people making these decisions right now to know that, if you've kept your insurance, you may get a little bit of that money back from the enhanced premiums or the higher premiums that you've been paying. It's kind of still a maybe, and it's still the exact nature of whatever deal happens is going to determine how much money you'd get back. So there's still a lot of uncertainty around that. But it also matters just for people thinking about whether to drop back their insurance or to have any kind of insurance at all. The people we talked to very strongly encourage people to keep some form of insurance. It's even if people need to drop down to a less expensive plan, it is better to have insurance of any kind that could protect you against something absolutely catastrophic happening. Even if that sort of lower level of insurance doesn't allow you to get the basic day-to-day coverage that you were using on the higher tier plan, it's better to have that level of protection than nothing. And if another element of a potential deal could be a reopening of the marketplace, allowing people to sign up or to bump their plans back up to a higher tier. So You know, if people are considering their options as the deadlines for enrollment in this current open enrollment period are coming up, the health experts we talked to really strongly encourage people to consider dropping down to a less expensive plan and keeping some level of insurance rather than going completely uninsured for that period of time.
Yeah, let's remind folks of the deadlines in New York and Pennsylvania. And, you know, as you said, some of these health experts are encouraging people to keep some level of coverage while things get worked out at the national level.
Yeah, the New York deadline. Sorry, I'm rifling through my papers here.
That's all right. It looks like it's January 15th, according to your website.
Yes, January 15th for the New York State of Health Marketplace. So that's coming up in a couple of days. In Pennsylvania, signups have been extended through January 31, according to the Penny website. So there's a little more time for people to make up their minds on that side of the river.
And these health policy experts, some of them have been through similar moments before. What are there some signs they're watching for that might indicate whether the tax credits are likely to return, or what are they saying?
Yeah, I mean, they're saying that, you know, there is still active movement on the federal level to come up with some kind of plan, and saying that, you know, that is a strong indication that some kind of plan will be worked out. It's also, you know, a major talking point politically about coming into the 2026 midterms with healthcare generally, and specifically with these tax credits. Back in December, it was four Republicans from, you know, purplish districts in in our general area, including our Representative Rob Bresnahan, who signed on to discharge petitions to get sort of conversations about these tax credits onto the floor for discussion in the first place. So that's, there's political will to get some kind of deal in place on both sides of the aisle. What one person we talked to said that these tax credits, when they were initially created, they were created in March and were backdated to January so that, you know, people who'd been paying higher premiums than they would have to pay under these new tax credits could get a little bit of that money back. They also said that there was a special enrollment period which opened up for people to upgrade their coverage or to sign up when those tax credits initially came in. So that's why they're saying those could be elements of a deal this time around, because that's kind of a playbook that was used the first time these credits were put into place. And again, there are no sort of guarantees on any of that. The exact language of any kind of deal is still very much up in the air and very much being worked out, but it's something to watch and to pay attention to.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the healthcare experts you spoke to said that the House bill in its current form is unlikely to pass the Senate, but that the Senate is working on some sort of potential extension compromise. Again, it's a could see what would happen. And healthcare has really become this defining political issue ahead of the 2026 midterms. As you mentioned, Rob Bresnahan up for re-election now, you know, making more, being more vocal about it. I wonder why they weren't more vocal before they expired.
Yeah, I mean, there was sort of this push to get a deal done before they expired, but it wasn't enough to get things across the line. Part of the difficulty in people coming together on this is, you know, you've got Democrats who are really pushing for this to be a clean extension, for things to just kind of continue on the way they had been going with these tax. From the Republican side, there's a lot more emphasis on rooting out alleged fraud, waste, and abuse in the system. So there's, you know, a lot more appetite for putting stricter rules in place around who gets to use these credits, or rules around, you know, auditing of the system, just general stuff like that. So it's not, so there's some agreement that an extension of these taxes or tax credits would be a good thing. But there's not, at this moment in time, a specific agreement on what exact form that should take. And that's kind of why it's taken so long to come to some kind of a deal, and why it could take, you know, even if there is a deal to come, why it could continue to take some more time to put a deal together.
And for listeners trying to make sense of all this, what's the single most important takeaway from your reporting right now?
I think the single most important takeaway is, like, it is better to have some level of insurance than no level of insurance. So as, you know, you're making decisions about individual, like, insurance policies, if there's a way to drop down to a less expensive plan that, you know, is still going to be expensive, but could potentially keep your premiums roughly similar to what they were before these credits expired, and then maybe take advantage of a future open enrollment opportunity if the credits come back to, like, bump that up to a level of coverage that allows you to, you know, meet your daily healthcare needs. That is definitely an option worth considering over sort of seeing the sticker shock of these much higher premiums and saying, actually, I don't think this is sustainable for me or in any form. So, and again, it's very much based on your individual financial situation. This is just general advice that we were hearing from the health policy experts we talked to. But yeah, just something to keep in mind as these deadlines are coming up.
That's Leah Mayo, news editor for The River Reporter. We're talking about in health insurance tax credits, and while some health experts say there might still be hope for those to be restored, you can read Liam's reporting and all the great reporting from the team at riverreporter.com. Liam, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the Borscht Belt is back. A conversation with the comedian curating a bold new season of Catskills comedy. That's next. This is Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, you've seen Venezuelans around the world celebrating the takedown of former President Maduro, but inside the country, the streets are silent. And in the rest of Latin America, there is anger. We provide the necessary context. That's this week on Latino USA. Thursday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple, free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Comedy once defined the Catskills. For decades, the Borscht Belt was a proving ground, a place where immigrant stories, sharp one-liners, and future legends took shape on small stages and big resorts. Now that tradition is getting some new life. This weekend, the Borscht Belt Museum launches a new season of its Borscht Belt Comedy Club at Shadowland Stages in Ellenville. At the center of it is comedian Alejandro Morales. He was born in Ellenville, and he is based in Philadelphia, but returning home to help revive Catskills comedy for a new generation. And Alejandro Morales joins us now. Hello.
Hi.
I mentioned you were born in Ellenville. Your parents actually met working at one of the resorts. Tell us a little bit about that and what how that influenced your comedy in the Catskills.
For sure. So my mom and dad are both from Chile, and they emigrated separately in the 1970s. My father says that he was the first Chilean in Ellenville. You take that with a grain of salt. But he got a job at the Neville Hotel, and then my mother got a job at the Neville Hotel, and they met working in the dining room, which I think is really funny. They were both from the same country, did not know each other in Chile, never met in Chile, were not from the same region at all, and then managed to find each other.
Did we lose you? Oh, darn. Alejandro, we lost you for a second there. We'll take a quick break and get him back online. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, the three sons team up with a pipe organ for the musical equivalent of Godzilla stomping on Bambi. And there's something new by Mondo Hamondo. I'm Darryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Okay, I think we've restored the line here with Alejandro Morales. Alejandro, are you there?
Yes, sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
No, we don't know. Maybe it was another Chilean from Ellenville who was protesting somehow. Tell me more about your parents. As you were saying, they didn't know each other. They somehow met together at the Neville Resort dining room. And how did that shape your sense of humor and identity growing up?
Well, by the time I was a teenager, the sort of the heyday of the Borscht Belt was more or less, you know, in the past. So I unfortunately missed all of the wonderful, you know, the emergence of live stand-up comedy in the region. I didn't really discover it live until I moved to Philadelphia. But once I did catch the comedy bug, I started doing stand-up. And when it came time to sort of, you know, leave Philadelphia and move back to Allenville, I really wanted to sort of bring back this original, you know, art form that had, you know, sprang up in the 20th century and bring it back to that heyday so that people can continue to enjoy that live arts in Allenville.
When did you realize that being from the Catskills, where, you know, comedy was historically incubated, how that could be a part of your voice as a comedian? Was it when you moved back, or did it kind of strike you before then?
Well, I was a big fan of Joan Rivers. She was one of my favorite comedians growing up. And I also was a big fan of Sandra Bernhard and Richard Lewis. So just from television, I feel like I sort of absorbed a lot of that original Borscht Belt flavor. You know, Joan Rivers, of course, worked a lot in the Borscht Belt. Mel Brooks, Don Rickles, a lot of really, really hilarious voices. So even though I didn't know at the time, you know, I didn't put two and two together when I was, you know, a teen or in my 20s, but I have always been connected to this tradition that started in my hometown, which made it all the more, you know, cooler just to discover that that's where it had come from in the beginning.
And, you know, down the road from us here is the site of the original Woodstock Festival in Bethel Woods. And musicians who come there see this as a historic place and, you know, get this feeling about performing there. Do comedians get that feeling about being in the Borscht Belt, like coming back to where, you know, these legends were born? Is that a similar kind of feeling?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's this thing that it's sort of this thing that you don't even know that you've forgotten, right? So people come up to the Hudson Valley and they sort of, you know, it kind of dawns on the comedians. They're like, oh, this is where it all started. And those conversations usually happen in the green room before the show. And you can tell that there's this really neat sense of being sort of tied to the history and sort of, you know, taking part in that tradition. You could definitely feel it when you're there.
You're the curator host headlining as well at the Borscht Belt Comedy Club this season. Tell us a little bit about the lineup this season.
Okay, so we've got Saturday show with Jeffrey Gurian and Alan Frischman, who is a local of the Catskills and a plumber and also an author, as well as Bess Sparber, who is from New York City, and David Lonstein, who's a local. So we're really excited about our debut show in January, and then we've got a full season of programming following that. In February, we're celebrating Black History Month with a couple of my friends from Philadelphia who now live in New York, Chanel Ali and Anthony Moore. Super excited to bring them to my hometown. In March, we've got Judy Gold, Emmy Award winning Judy Gold, sort of our marquee performer of the season. And then we're going to close things out in April and May. In April, we've got a Spanish language show with Laura Bolivar. I really want to bring something to my generation and my parent generation of people who worked in the hotels, who were Latin American and South American and speak primarily Spanish. So I'm really excited to take a big swing with Laura Bolivar in April. And then in May, we've got a family-friendly show sort of so we can offer as much comedy as we can to as big of a population as we can.
The original Borscht Belt comedy scene gave immigrant communities a place to laugh at themselves and be seen. Do you see parallels in what you're building now, specifically also with Laura Bolivar?
Yes, absolutely. I think the story of the Borscht Belt is the story of outsiders who were not welcomed everywhere. You know, it was Jewish folks who wanted to go on vacation. They couldn't go on vacation where they wanted to because of prejudice, which is so horrible. But they took that rejection and that outsider status, and they built something that became an art form that has taken the entire world by storm. And I think that is such an amazing story, and I love that we can now sort of plug in our outsider voices, our marginalized communities, and carry on in that tradition of maybe having an outsider status, not being looked so kindly upon, but having somewhere to practice your art and entertain and connect with your community. And I don't think there's anything more beautiful than that.
What do you hope this moment says about the future of comedy in the Catskills and the multicultural reality of American comedy you're weaving in and reflecting now with the Borscht Belt Comedy Club?
Yeah, you just can't count. You can't count out the live arts, you know? It's something that sort of laid dormant and it had to come back one way or another, and I'm so glad that I get to be a part of that.
What does your family think about you being back in Ellaville and curating this comedy club?
Oh, well, my mother is so excited to have you back home.
Yeah.
She's thrilled, 100%.
That's
my late father was maitre d' in the Neville and at the Concord. He met a bunch of celebrities. I'm sure he would be super, super excited if he was still with us.
That's comedian Alejandro Morales, curator, host. He's headlining also at the Borscht Belt Comedy Club this season. The new season kicks off Saturday at Shadowland Stages in Ellenville with performances throughout the winter and spring. You can find the full lineup at the Borscht Belt Museum's website, borschtbeltmuseum.org. Alejandro, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, and before we go, a little Olympic news. Thousands of fans gathered in Lake Placid earlier this week for the Aerial Skiing World Cup. An American woman with ties to Northern New York took home gold at the final aerials event just before the Olympics. Emily Russell reports for the New York Public News Network.
Aerial skiing is kind of like the vault event in gymnastics. Athletes build up speed, launch themselves up in the air, do a bunch of flips and twists, and then are expected to stick the landing. At the World Cup events in Lake Placid, thousands of fans watched some of the best aerial skiers in the world, including top Americans.
So Derek Kruger representing the United States of America, full, double, full, full.
Kruger leans forward as he skis down the slope. He then lifts his hands above his head as he flies off the jump. After a few twists and flips in the air, Kruger sticks a wobbly landing.
What's it like to watch these guys fly through the air?
It's pretty amazing. It's not usually something that you get to see every day.
That's Leland Lout Carpenter. He's 12 years old. Leland and his dad, Jesse, drove down from Morrisonville, just west of Plattsburgh, to watch the World Cup aerials on Sunday. On Monday, some local schools bussed their students in to watch the event. Jesse Carpenter says it's pretty special that kids in the area get access to these kinds of competitions.
I think it opens up an opportunity for locals, youngsters like my son Leland. He skis at a smaller area called Beartown Ski Area. We have a T-bar. So for him to come to see this, you know, an hour away from where we live is pretty cool, pretty awesome.
The event was actually two World Cup competitions combined over 2 days. Utah was originally supposed to host one of the events, but had to move it to Lake Placid because of a lack of snow. A skier from Ukraine tackles the same series of flips as the American man, but ends up with a cleaner landing.
Oh, yeah. He likes that. Nice jump for Jan.
I asked Leland if seeing this kind of high-flying sport makes him want to take on bigger ski jumps.
No, I'm fine doing smaller jumps because you never know what can go wrong.
We don't see any big crashes on this day, but some of the landings look pretty rough. A few skiers land hard, their backs and heads slamming into the ski slope. Hunter Williams knows all about the risks and rewards of winter sports. He's a skeleton slider from Pittsburgh. Williams came to cheer on the athletes after his own races in Lake Placid.
Everyone says skeleton's crazy. These ladies and gentlemen are way crazier than we are, for sure.
Why do you say that?
I mean, they're launching themselves 60 feet in the air doing flips, you know.
Wow. Make some noise, you guys. Excellent start.
the finals for women right there, Laura Peel.
I've gotten to watch a lot of these kids grow up and like get better at the sport, being at the training center all the time, so it's fun to come like watch and see them compete at the highest level.
Two American women make it to the finals on this day, including Kayla Kuhn. She tackles three twists and three flips for her second jump of the day.
Super wild to see how many flips they're doing in the air, how high they go.
That's Maria Rumfola. She's a college student at Cornell and is here in the crowd with her mom, Jennifer, who says the two are having a blast.
Lake Placid is great. Perfect little ski town. Taste of the Adirondacks. The weather couldn't be better. Blue skies, perfect.
Against those blue skies, Australian Danielle Scott launches herself up in the air, effortlessly twisting and turning around and landing smoothly on the snow.
Wow. I don't know if there's a perfect full, but that's about as close as you can get to perfection on that double twisting, double back flip.
Every athlete here gets big cheers from the crowd, whether they're from Australia, China, Ukraine, or the U.S. Jennifer Rumfola says it's all part of what makes this event so fun.
It's definitely a collective experience, and you're cheering for everyone, not just your own country, right, for them to have success. And the jumping is amazing, and the landings look really, really tough, really hard.
The competitions over 2 days in Lake Placid were the last two World Cup events of the season. Many of the aerial skiers here are now headed on to the Winter Olympics in Milano Cortina. Those games begin on February 6th. In Lake Placid, I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
And a reminder that New York Governor Kathy Hochul is giving her State of the State address today at 1 o'clock. Radio Catskill will bring you special live coverage of the State of the State address from the New York Public News Network, hosted by the Capitol Press Room's David Lombardo. Our local coverage continues tonight at 6 on the local edition when Jason Dole gets reaction from the speech from local representatives and our New York News partners. That's coverage of New York State of the State address on air and online. WJFFradio.org on Radio Catskill. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Support comes from Catskill Art Space in Livingston Manor, offering exhibitions, performances, screenings, and more, with long-term installations from James Turrell and Saul LeWitt. Open year-round. CatskillArtSpace.org.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul gives her State of the State address this afternoon, laying out her agenda for the year, even as the state faces federal cuts and as the governor faces a primary from within her own administration. Hear special coverage from the New York Public News Network live on Radio Catskill, hosted by David Lombardo from the Capitol Press Room, with commentary and analysis from Chantel Plummer and Morgan Hook. The State of the State address this afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
There are 14,932 ways to fall on the radio. In this next hour of Radiolab, we will bring you 8. Falling! That's the next Radiolab.
Wednesday afternoon at 2 on Radio Catskill.
NPR Music is looking for the next great undiscovered musician to play the tiny desk. If you're an unsigned artist, record a video of yourself playing one original song behind a desk and submit it to the 11th annual Tiny Desk Contest by February 9th. And if you win, you'll play your very own Tiny Desk concert. Think you've got what it takes? Learn more at WJFFradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, breezy this afternoon at a high of 39, clouds tonight and a low of 30. Looking ahead, we'll get rain tomorrow morning until late tomorrow night, and then that's going to change to snow and accumulations of 2 to 4 inches before ending on Thursday afternoon. Tomorrow's high 38, low 20, and then back to some colder weather. Thursday's high 24, down to 9 Thursday night. the frigid temperatures remain through Friday with a high near 20 with winds picking up as well, low of 16. A little warmer for the weekend, highs near 30.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming online at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.